One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to episode 81 of The Nero Show. In today's episode,
Chris won the graft into Inverell. He talks us through his massive carb load, and we discuss the ins and outs of Gran Fondo racing versus actual road racing.
Hock release a dramatic new road helmet, the Frozen Air. What do we think?
Is the Van Rysel bike the reason why Decathlon are winning so many pro races this year?
And industry people talk about industry things. What are they expecting later this year? All right, let's get into it. So I won a bike race, Jesse Coyle.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Clap. I have to clap.
Can't believe that took us a few days. I can't believe we just didn't record live from Grafton.
Yeah, I did, because I thought, well, let's get him, let's dial him in, let's hit record day of, night of on the caffeine high. But no, you've had to wait, and now we can recap.
So can we talk?
Yeah.
Okay, so what here's what I want to do.
What do you want to talk through?
Okay, here's what I want to do. So I thought we'd do it this way.
Okay.
If we're going to make a video about my ride, my race, and I was a trainer road podcast video, and then I was going to do a Dylan Johnson race recap video, right? So they're my two videos that I'm going to make in pretend land. The topic then for our trainer road, so the little thumbnail would be Chris at the end, how I won, blah, blah, blah. And I reckon it would be entirely based on the carb load. Can we talk about the carb load?
You'll have to start with how many watts per kilo you did for each hour of the race. You split it down. Everyone wants to know watts per kilo. So that would be first, and then it would be the carb load.
This was actually easier than I thought, Jesse. So you set me this challenge to try and get this done. So it was 12 grams of carbs per kilo of body weight, which had me at a 780 grams for the day.
Yes.
2.2 grams of protein per kilo body weight, which was 140 grams of protein, and 1.1 grams of fat.
That is so... To eat 780 grams of carbohydrate and only 70 grams of fat is very difficult. Even actually, even to keep the protein that low, that's still a lot of protein, probably more than you need, but just the sheer fact of trying to keep it that low gets hard.
It's hard, but it's not hard if you just eat. So really I just ate, well, I'll go through it actually. So my day the day before played out like this. I got up and had a bowl of Cocoa Pops with skim milk in them. Now, not a big bowl. This was a pretty small portion because what I wanted to do is get a quick hour and a half ride in and come back and essentially start eating, but I didn't want to do the ride fasted. Okay. So, had my bowl of Cocoa Pops, went out, did my hour and a half, few openers, all that kind of stuff, came back and settled in. Now, I put the rice cooker on before we left, came back and, so plate, big bowl of rice. I'll put
brown
a photo.
Brown rice,
white
purple rice.
Oh, my God,
black
it's white rice,
rice
ladies white and gentlemen, 100%
okay, good.
White rice.
Yep.
And just squeezed honey all over it.
Are you measuring the honey or are you just free pouring?
The first time I did measure it, but then I got a hang of how much was going in. So that was fine. And then 800 milliliters of apple juice. Again, no pulp in that apple juice. It's just the cheapest, like I think it was a Golden Circle or something. I put a photo up of it.
Isn't it kind of depressing? It kind of sounds like what they'd give you in a hospital. Mm-hmm. If it was like a hospital.
It was
like, well, why is my carb load meal hospital meal? Yep. Something weird's going on there.
Yep.
Anyway.
So a couple of hours later, I had some slop white bread with some honey and more apple juice. Now the slop white bread, again, you pointed this out to me that it's try and stay off because they're trying to sneak healthiness.
Oh, how I know.
Hang on, you're trying to put fiber in this. How dare you?
No.
It's actually quite, well, it's not actually that difficult to find, but, you know, the soft white slop sugar bread does still exist, but just be careful anytime they add in fiber, that kind of thing. So went for that with some honey, apple juice again, lunch, bowl of rice, tin tuna, a little bit of soy sauce on it for flavor, and more apple juice. The lollies are really, really useful. Mm-hmm. Like they're just, it's just pure sugar. Like there's nothing else in there. It's great.
Yep.
Sugar, so those for afternoon tea, another bowl of rice, bit of steamed chicken, apple juice, packet of lollies, like just the same old stuff. And the morning before the race, just a bowl of rice with honey again and coffee before the race. I got to 700 grams of carbs, there or thereabouts. That didn't factor in the milk, actually, for the cocoa salt pop, so maybe a little bit more. 80 grams of protein, and I kept the fat really low. Like,
I'm not
100% sure with the steamed chicken how much fat was in there, but it was steamed chicken breast. So I'm pretty confident that was pretty low. There's not much fat anywhere else in any of the stuff that I was eating. So what I actually found from doing it was it wasn't as when it's once you do it, but you do it with the right foods. It's pretty easy. And I actually found myself, instead of being bloated, I was actually, you just never felt full because the food that I was eating is just total trash that it's just probably being processed immediately. And I was honestly, every 2 hours, kind of hungry again and happy to eat another white bread sandwich happily. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have any like gut issues coming out of it like that at all. Yeah, again, like I actually was hungry to eat food, so I was quite happy with that.
I mean, yeah, and that's that is just so for people that think they carb load, that would be what you've eaten is so foreign from what they're probably doing, which is like big sloppy, like a pizza. Like I'm carb loading, I'm having a pizza. You're like, well, you've had your day's worth of fat in one pizza. So yeah, that's. You've done it well.
I can see how easily it slides away. I mean, even if you sort of went for like a donut or something, oh, I'm carb loading, donut.
Burrito.
Like, yeah, burrito. It's so easily then you've thrown in a heap of fat and then next minute you're like, oh, I'm full, I can't eat anymore. Well, yes, that's kind of why. It's boring, but I don't know. Look, from an effectiveness perspective, I certainly found after the fourth hour that I had good legs.
Yep.
I really did. So whether that was the carb load or not, I don't know.
Would you do it again? You're going to do Grafton next year. Here's the question. You're going to go Grafton next year. Would you do that again or would you just go back to your usual pre-race diet? Where do you stand on it?
I'd do it again. Yeah. I wouldn't go any higher than that.
Yep.
Carb-wise. But I'd definitely do it again. And the fact that it was only a day.
Yeah.
You know how it used to always put me off that people would talk about carb loading like 2 or 3 days out? That's just, it's almost too much preparation. Like, this needed preparation, like to actually do. So, yeah, that's kind of why I would probably go down that route again. And I knew that I'd fueled the race well and the carb load well because I finished the race at 2 o'clock in the afternoon and I wasn't hungry until 7:30 that night. So, that's kind of a good indicator that I've done a pretty good job fueling the race. The other thing was, yes, I think if I was Dylan Johnson, I'm doing a video review of this. I think we've got to talk about the fact that probably around a one by for it.
Yep.
It was exactly what we kind of thought. So I don't know. I'll flash this up. That was the breakdown of the gears that I ran throughout the day. So I only spent 3 minutes and 30 seconds in the 36.
This is mind blowing. Look at this research we've got data.
Yeah. So
wow.
That 28:24. That's kind of where you're spending a good bit of time on Gibraltar.
How did you spend 30 minutes in the 10 tooth?
Mate, just putting the big dog.
Just chucking along. Yeah, that's a lot of time.
Yeah, that'd be mostly in the back end because we were tailwind And yeah.
Okay. Wow.
You know, after you've got to remember after the top of, yeah, well, that, yeah, that's a tailwind. That's a tailwind. Okay. So, you know, the biggest thing people asked about it was just the gearing, whether that was an issue. The, as I said, the minimums and the maximums weren't the issue. It's definitely the jump between the 32 and the 28. That's a dramatic gear shift when you are, you know, sub-threshold climbing. It's just not a comfortable place to be. And that's certainly the only downfall of it. But certainly the extremes of it weren't. And 30 mil tires. Like that's, it just seems to me ridiculous that I rode, I had a look at what bike I did that on originally, like with tubs and 23s and all that kind of stuff. You know, 30 mil front and rear, one by, and yeah.
How have you got 30 mil Jeep? They don't sell them anymore. The 30, are they 30 or 32?
30.
30, okay. Never find them in stock. I don't think it goes from 28 to 30. So you bought
them all.
I'll have a look in the back.
Got them all. So that's a point-to-point race. And we've sort of danced around this idea of like how to improve racing and all this sort of stuff. And maybe that's another conversation. But there was a couple of things that I saw.
Should they make that a Grand Fondo? I mean, it's a race. It's a state. It's an Oz Cycling under Oz Cycling New South Wales sanctioned road race. But you're going off. And she's not divisioned anymore, is it? It's age grouped, which means it's actually, besides the fact that it's classified as a road race, it's actually a Grand Fondo. Because if it's mass start and then results are given out per age group, but you all started together, that's a Grand Fondo.
But there's an overall winner as well.
Not really. Because the guy that wins the 30 to 35 gets a gold medal. You won.
Yeah, but
as far as he's concerned, he's won. That's a Grand Fondo if you've all started together.
But that jersey is for the overall winner.
Yeah. Yep. But
not the age group.
No, no. But that's they would do that in a Grand Fondo. You're first across the line. You're the winner.
Yeah, I mean, I don't.
You know, there's no division now. There's no divisions. You used to have the NRS race, then Div 2, Div 3, and they would start separately.
Yes. So now they have the NRS now race, and they have they call the men's.
Now it's open. Everyone else.
Men's opens.
Yeah, men's opens. Basically a Grand Fondo.
If they called it a Grand Fondo, do you think more people would do it?
Yes. That's why, because when people hit. If it's not called a Grand Fondo, people are a bit confused and they kind of scares people off. Like, well, it's a road race. Like, does that mean if I'm Jack from Grafton Cycling Club, do I have to go and try and follow Chris Miller when he's attacking at the start of a race because it's a road race? That's like, I don't want to do that. But if it's a Grand Fondo, it changes the vibe.
It does. I don't.
And that's why I was confused this year when I saw that. I was like, oh, it's a mass start. There's no more divisions. Everyone goes off at the same time, but it's a road race still. That looks like a Grand Fondo. I don't really know why they wouldn't just call it a Grand Fondo. Wouldn't they get more people?
They would probably get more people. Yes, I don't disagree with that. My pushback is it changes the way the actual race happens. So this is raced like a race. There are people attacking. That is what I love about bike racing and what the Grand Fondo doesn't have. The Grand Fondo etiquette tends to be in Australia that you ride to whatever the selection point is, and then it's just a who's the strongest up this. You know, the idea of getting a gap before a climb or, you know, dropping the wheel of someone and attacking across to them, you know, all this.
So people
kind of
were doing that at
100%,
the start of this.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. I was one of them.
Like okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, last year was different again.
But people don't want to do it. That's my point is people don't want to do that.
See, I would, okay.
Hold on. Because if they're doing that, why are you all starting together? Why the hell is, again, like a 7-year-old from Inverell having to start with you and you're off there sending attacks at 800 watts? I mean, that sucks.
But that's a traffic management issue. That's That's you're yeah. starting everyone to get one envelope. So,
yeah.
But no, I disagree.
It's called a grand fondo.
I disagree. I completely disagree. I think yes, there are extreme examples. Absolutely. Definitely. 7-year-old bloke from Grafton, 100%. That's neither here nor there. He can do whatever he wants. But half the people that don't turn up to these that are quote unquote scared of doing a race because it's a race. But on the flip side, race the grand fondos. They are the ones that, okay, changing the name to this might sell them the idea.
Yep.
But they do want this. They're just scared. They don't know it. That's my point, is that a couple, you know, Ben Nepal, Chris Ling will do a couple of attacks and then they'll go, all right, okay, I see what's happening here. And it's not fucking rocket science, what's going on. And as I said, half the people approach their grand fondo, might be barrel or something like that, like a race anyway. So just because this...
Whereas I see, I think it's the opposite. This was a road race. I think most people are approaching it like a grand fondo. And given how hard the course is, I don't think it would be too bad if they just called it a grand fondo anyway.
I'd be pissed
And you
off.
Just waited and... Why would it annoy you?
Because
it would
I
still
want
be
to
just
race.
A select, but it would be just you could race it
because then I don't have to sit around and have these stupid conversations. Oh, it's just a grand fondo. Chill out. Like, fuck off. It's a race. Like, we don't get any. We literally get one of these. Like, don't take this one away from me. Like,
but then half the people don't show up because it's not a grand fondo. So yeah, it's a road race, but with a bunch of the Grand Fondo people not there because they don't want to do a road race.
But I totally push back. We had 80 people start with us, right? And okay,
yeah, but half the field aren't there to do a road race. They're just people, they're Grand Fondoers.
Let's say half of them were quote-unquote Grand Fondoers. You tell them they're Grand Fondoers. I'm sure they'll be delighted to it.
Well, they are. I coached a few that did it. Let's say that. As a Grand Fondo.
Let's say they are. I still think they get a buzz out of being involved in this mass start antics that are happening anyway. And, okay, yes, by the time we get to Cuddle Creek and we're doing 440 watts for 4 minutes, that's probably their experience over. But I still don't think that's a bad thing for anyone to experience it. And they didn't come away from it going, well, I'm never doing that again. I mean,
I just think it's a bad thing from the the fact that there was what you said 80 people and there's thousands at an actual Grand Fondo. So
I don't disagree with that.
Grafton,
but I would love to make a video of this. So because there is so much of the Grand Fondo people would see this and go, well, I could do that. I'm into this. Okay, there are logistic challenges to it. Can I just quickly say, actually? Shout, talking to people, I dropped my camera at Glen Innes feed zone. It's a white camera. I can't make a video of this event if I can't find this camera. It was stupid. I had it in my pocket and I pulled it out to swap it over and it went into my bag, my Musette that I threw. And I've spoken to the organizers. They've done a massive sweep of the lost and found. But if there's anyone at Glen Innes who picked up an Insta360 fob, like it's the bit that the thing goes into, please let me know. Anyway, yes, please. If they saw how this event played out, they would literally go, actually, you know. So, I mean, you look at something like Tour of Brisbane, which by all accounts was a bit of a shit show in terms of, you know, the logistics of it. You've got this age group running into that age group and then, like, there's a left turn, there's a right. Everyone just starts in Grafton. You finish in Inverell 6.5 hours later and – where you finish is you finish. You're not taking wrong turns. You're not catching other grades. It's just
but it's
so much more simple. And I honestly think that if people saw this, they would be far less frightened by it. It's far less frightening than going to Masters Nationals or something. That is a very different, like, experience for people, far more intimidating.
But wouldn't it just make it clear if they just said there's the Grafton to Inverell NRS race as it always has been, and then there's the Grafton Grand Fondo.
No.
You go from Grafton to Inverell and it's a grand. You all start together in one massive wave, and then they'll ride away up the climbs, and it'll be just like a grand final. Whereas now it's a state road race.
No, it takes the prestige away from it. As soon as you turn, 100%. If you turn this into a grand fondo, like it's just
prestige. Why does it take the prestige away?
I don't feel
any less. When I've won Snowy Classic, or I don't feel like it's less of an achievement because it's not a road race. It's still just as hard. If anything, it's more of an achievement because there's 10, 20 times as many people.
Couldn't disagree with you more. Like, I finished second behind you at Snowy Classic and these sort of things. I don't want to say I don't give a shit, but I pretty much don't give a shit. Like, I was proud of my ride, but from a competitive perspective, I didn't care. I'm so proud of the last 2 years' achievements winning a bike race. I don't get to do that very often, if ever. And if, like, it, yeah, like, it's, no, don't but take it, that away from
but
me.
It's, I'm not taking away from him. It's extremely hard, but I'm just saying I'm going to sound rude. You won a bike race by classification. Mm-hmm. It was essentially a grand fondo. What did you have to do other than a grand fondo? You had to follow a few attacks. But there's no teams. There's less people than a grand fondo. So you essentially won a really hard grand fondo. But it was a road, but technically it's a road race. I don't see why it would take anything away from you if they just call it a grand fondo. If anything, it would be more impressive because it'd be more people. You're ahead of, instead of being ahead of 79 people, you're ahead of 700 and not, well, okay, not that they're ever going to get that many more
people. But the narrative
people,
is that the grand fondo is not a race.
Only in Australia.
Yeah.
In that, Europe, it's not.
I agree.
In Europe, you're a living legend if you win the, like a Stelvio Grand Fondo.
So that's the thing. We either change the definition in Australia of Grand Fondo to be an actual race. Now, the problem you have there is the people who organise the quote-unquote Grand Fondos, like the Barrel Classic and the Snowy Classic, are actively telling us it is not a race. It is literally on your registration. This is not a race. Okay? Now,
tell that's it.
Well, there's that's the fact. But when you sign up to do Grafton to Inverell Men's Open, which could play out like a Grand Fondo, this is a race. You need a race license to do this. Here's first prize, second prize, third prize. Everything about it says race.
Yes.
So, you know, you can't have both. I mean, I agree with you. If it was actually termed a Grand Fondo, it would increase the participation. It would be less scary. But fuck off, because you can't take – I think it's just the Grand Fondo crowd are too soft or too scared to come and do something that's called a race. Now, I should add, they're well and truly capable of it, and the second that they turned up and did this would realize, holy shit, this is amazing. It's basically the same, but it's the language of it that scares people.
So, I can kind of agree with you. I'm just saying from Grafton to Inverell's perspective, I think they'd be better to just admit defeat and just call it a grand fondo, soften it for everyone, and they'll get more people. And for the people in it, it will be just as good a – I can't call it a race, can I? It'll be just as good of a competitive ride, but more people will show up. And you still have your fastest – whoever did it fastest is the winner. It's a weird – yeah. But that's how it is in Europe. Like, no one wins a Grand Fondo in Europe and doesn't think they won or didn't win a – it's a
freaking but a Grand
race.
Fondo in Europe is an amateur road race.
Well, yeah.
Essentially. Yep. It is not an amateur road race, and we are so limited in terms of – the road races we can do in this country that you can't,
okay.
change
we'll
that
see.
Language.
I just do think it's holding that event race back because it's a race. And seemingly, I mean, there are other reasons why people don't want to do Grafton Inverell, like that you finish 226 kilometres away.
True.
In the middle of nowhere.
Yes. No, I agree with that. There's logistic issues to it. Absolutely. There are logistic issues to try and find accommodation at Falls Creek as well. So let's not go down that route too much. Can I just say what they did do this year, and this is sort of important for the Grand Fondo crowd to hear, is that so you got your two feed zones, but they also had heaps of neutral water. So they actually had three motos following us the whole time. It was essentially like you put your hand up, the moto would come up with water. And they also, all the little motos, oh God, I hope I find my camera because I've got great footage of this, that they have, they had like a little trailer out the back of the moto, and you'd put your rubbish in the little trailer in there, and then the commissaire would sort of come up. It was run from a like in the on the road perspective. You actually really only needed that first feed zone. You probably could have got away without the second one because of the access to water for the rest of the event. So that kind of stuff was done very well. Okay, I don't want to do the pillar nutrition read this week, Jesse. So this is a paid bit for about 60 seconds or so. I just want to talk about my personal experience using it. I have been using pillar for the last few months, specifically a little bit coming into Grafton, pillar nutrition, micro nutrition brand, triple magnesium blend, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what I've found with it is, especially after bigger days, I would tend to get like a restless leg thing. So get into bed, sort of start to settle down a bit, legs just start twitching and feeling, and I'd get out of bed and I'd start stretching and I'd do like dynamic, I'm literally like doing dynamic stretches either side of the bed. And I have found since using this product that I haven't had to do that as much. Where this fits in for people, make up your own mind. But what I will say is this, right? If you're wasting your money on athletic greens or ketones, God, they're back again. Anyway, sorry. I honestly think this is a better 1% or 0.2% if you're in that sort of thing. The last thing I'll say about it is it's not a sleeping pill. It's not like if you take it, a shot of pillar, you know, you'll be falling asleep at the wheel or anything like that. It just seems to help for me with that.
So if you'd like to try Pillar today, get 15% off using code Nero at pillarperformance.shop. Or for North American listeners, head to thefeed.com/pillar and enter code Nero for 15% off.
Yeah, all right. So is this, I think that are we phrasing this, is this the tipping point? Have we reached the point when the aero helmet has become just standard operating procedure? Because I think you pointed this out this week to me that POC have released their new version of it. And what's the reaction been? Well, we'll go through it. And what's the reaction been?
Well, I think the reaction, a lot of what I've seen, is this is such an easy thing to laugh at. The aero road helmet designed to be used in road races by road riders, the look of it with the visor, the easy thing that you probably see is just, oh, that looks stupid. Oh, this, oh, you know, the next thing we got to buy. Oh, it looks so ridiculous. And I just think it's, firstly, this POC Pro Syn Air, that's the one I'm talking about, this new POC one that you've seen Air riding. Okay, it looks a bit ridiculous, but I just wanted to talk about the whole thing, the release, because I think it's a pretty good, I am, my bias, my start is that I have been compelled to buy this.
Mm.
I would seriously buy this for many reasons. I basically want to walk you through them and get your opinion on it. Firstly, the price. They've got a new helmet. It's got a visor built in. So you're kind of, well, if you're buying a regular helmet and glasses, you kind of could argue it's got a bit of that in it. It's the latest thing. It's been tested. So you got to pay for that. That doesn't create itself. What's the retail price on this in Australia? $575. Sounds like a lot of money, but when you just go into the road section of any of the retailers in Australia and have a look at what's the price of another helmet, well, you've got the Kask Utopia, $380, the Giro Helios Spherical, $400, the Lima Atlas MIPS, $400. So it's more expensive than that, but it's not. That price didn't blow me away. I don't know if I'm losing my marbles or I'm way out of touch. I thought for a just released product, I mean, this came out as the time we were recording about a week and a half ago, the price isn't ridiculous, I think. So the first thing was that. I mean, they could have, with these things, as you see in the bike industry, this could be one of those make up the price. They could have charged 2,000, 1,000, and you, there's nothing really to compare it to. I thought 575 was...
Yes, that is around what I, price-wise, I kind of thought this would be where this would land. Can I just say, I'm particularly underwhelmed with how out there this is. I'm looking at a photo at the moment of the front of the women's pro peloton, and it's a front-on shot of the EF riders and the, what's her name? Canadian national.
Alison Jackson
on the front as well. And it's a front-on photo, and you're kind of looking at it, and they're obviously on this new EF photo, a new EF helmet, and behind them are all the other helmets, which are aero normal helmets, but everyone's kind of got big glasses on at this point, and you're kind of looking at it going, all right. I mean, if you just pointed that, if you just sent that photo to a non-cyclist and went, you know, what's weird here, I don't think they would spot that and go, this is a bit strange. So that was my initial thing, was like, why is this seemingly as big a stir as it is? But I do get it when you sort of step away from it and you do look at it. Yes, okay, we are heading far more towards the end of the time trial helmet. What's the reaction been?
Yeah, but well, the thing is, it might look a bit odd now, but me 10 years ago going out for a training run with carbon wheels on, that looked really odd. It wasn't a thing. It was, what do you got carbon wheels on for? You looked like an idiot. And even same thing with the skin suits, going out now for a ride with carbon wheels and a skin suit on, or an aero road skin suit, doesn't look out of place. So this is just keep up with the times, people. Don't be afraid of this sort of, I'm going to call it progress. I think 15 years, this will be the done thing.
Are you tempted by this? I mean, let's be honest. The reason we're talking about this is because this sparked Jesse Coyle's interest.
Oh, I'm 100% tempted. I am. Right. It's in stock in Australia.
Right, there we go.
And I'm going, okay, if I'm going to start racing later in the year, well, if you look at some of the claims aerodynamically, it's very vague. It's sort of, they're saying gains ranging from 5 to 18 watts compared to the ventral, measured at speeds from 30K an hour to 60K an hour. So you're saving some. I mean, look at it. You're clearly saving something. If I'm in a crit off the front at 50K an hour and it saves me 6 watts, let's go the bottom end of that. Well, why wouldn't you want that? Why wouldn't I want that?
Mm.
So I'm kind of going, well, why would I wear my regular helmet if this is faster?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. All right. The first one is that this probably, what did we say? It's $500-$600. This is probably not your everyday helmet. You're not going out for every ride. I mean, maybe for you just going around Centennial Park, but most people aren't just going to run this helmet as their day-to-day. I'm going to go to a Cooner. I'm going to go to Bobbin Head. I'm going to do these sort of rides. This is not my one helmet to rule them all. No, 100%. Don't think it is.
There's pretty big vents on the front. No. Look at the three vents.
No.
It's not one of these closed-off hot box things that you used to get.
Don't see it. Don't see that being a case. Happy to prove wrong in 10 or 15 years, but that is not an everyday helmet, 100%. The other one is, didn't we just have this chat with Shane?
It only weighs 350 grams.
Oh, okay. Yes, maybe. I still think there's enough of a barrier.
You're a Luddite, Chris. Yeah. Keep up with the time.
I'm not saying I wouldn't go this route. I'm just saying I don't think this is an everyday helmet. I just don't see myself with a T-shirt on and my top tube bag rocking this helmet. I'm crossing too many categories there. So there's that one. The other is, didn't we just have this chat with Shane Miller where we were talking about helmets? He was talking about the helmets that he was running in his time trials, and he was saying he ended up, you know, he had the long-tailed ones on there and that people were running those short-tailed ones because they were the cool ones at the time, because I think that's what Chris Froome was running. and it kind of looked less intimidating as the big Longhorn ones.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, it was the long ones which had the aero advantage. So, is there? It's not like an aero sock where you just put an aero sock on and you're just faster, which to me is like the. Does it cut through to that level, where it's just become everybody because it's the easiest solution? I still think there's enough with the helmets that people would go, you know what? I haven't been in a wind tunnel. I haven't seen my CDA. I'll just run the normal one and see how it goes.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
If you're racing, I think that would be an unwise choice. There'd probably have to be more independent testing, but I'd be very surprised if in any situations it was where you're at speed racing, it's any slower than any regular helmets. That's why I'd say, I disagree. I'm convinced it'd be faster.
We did run.
Just like aero socks.
We ran that helmet with a visor, the Bullet 2, mm-hmm. for a period of time. And you weren't running that as your everyday helmet by any stretch of the imagination.
No. So this one is lighter, by the way. That Bullet was about 500 grams. So that was quite heavy. And that was also just a regular helmet with a visor attached. Mm-hmm. So this thing goes over the years. It's a totally different ball game. I ran that. That was my helmet.
Mm. My other thing with this, it's day-to-day practicality with the visor. Don't you remember with the visor how it was great visually when you were looking down and in a aero position, but if you're just riding up Wakehurst Parkway, you're not in a full-out aero position, and then you do lose a little bit of sensory feeling from that. So
they claim because it blocks the wind noise, it makes you to sound better.
I like that. I'm on board with that.
I don't know how covering your ears could make you more aware with the sound.
I could see that. Less wind noise, you'd be more aurally aware of the other noises involved. Yeah, I can buy into that claim.
Okay. All right. The release of this, I just think they did a good job. So POC Sports Instagram, they've done heaps of posts on it. They've also done the collaboration post with EF Pro Cycling. EF did their own post, and they've done a whole 50-minute podcast on the EF podcast channel thing about the creation of the helmet. I think from a branding point of view, it was a good – it convinced me that I want one.
Mm.
So I just think it's an interesting release. Price is expensive but not ridiculous given the prices you're paying for a top-end helmet now, given it includes a visor.
Where does the POC brand sit for you? Is it a performance-orientated
No.
No?
Okay. Hard no. That's the interesting thing about POC. POC was always the fashion brand. That POC, the classic, I can't even remember the model name, the one that everyone ran, that was always, when I was coming, was the fashionable helmet. They made it slightly more aerodynamic and tweaked it, but it's been that same mushroom-shaped helmet forever. not particularly amazing. It was never. It was a breathable road helmet that looked cool.
Their whole gambit from the beginning, because they from what I understand, they came from outdoors like winter sports. Yeah. So very much skiing, backcountry skiing, that kind of stuff. And their whole thing was safety. So that was very much. They were one of the first guys to make skiing helmets cool. So there were always skiing helmets, but they were a bit naff. Then they came along with a couple, and I think there's another brand called Peak Performance that came in at that point, another Scandi brand that made safety cool. And I reckon that's what they've tried to do initially with cycling, because I remember they had that orange, that was their whole, that was like yes. Classically POC, was that you can see us, it's a safety orientated brand. I think I had some of their kit very early on. It was terrible. But was all safety orientated. It was like you looked like a crash test dummy initially. Mm-hmm. So,
but they've always been a weird brand because their time trial helmets were always popular.
Yes.
So they had these sort of people on the track would use their time trial helmets, but then the road helmet was always this kind of afterthought, it seemed, that was only really used for fashion. And this looks, yeah, I've never really understood the brand, but yeah, I get what
you're saying. It's a brand that works with EF education, whereas if it was, you know, Lotto Soudal or one of these sort of Belgian teams, I don't think the match would be quite right, whereas it seems to work sort of well with the Cannondales and those sort of things. Yeah. So ultimately, yes, this is on your 2024 shopping list, you reckon, Jesse?
Yeah, can we stop hating on Aero looking? They're going to be faster.
All right, well, maybe I can take that into a bit of a chat about, just quickly, about industry trends. Yep. This sort of stuff. So I think we've almost had a week where a bike wasn't launched, which mm-hmm. has been nice for a change. But I did see one of Dave Arthur's videos towards the back end of his Sea Otter time where he was just chatting to some industry heads that were there. And a lot of these videos tend to be pretty shit. And a few of the people he interviewed were a bit crap. So the campy guy was just like, what? He's like, oh, we've got super – anyway, I won't go into it. It's just so irrelevant. It's just not funny. But a couple of the guys were kind of interesting, I thought. The first one was the Michael Jakubowski. Let's just go with that for the moment.
Okay.
He was kind of right on where I was at the moment, which is, okay, we're all hearing wider tires and all that kind of stuff. But he was on it with rim manufacturers to keep going wider rim widths to make this more and more viable for us, but also making wider rim widths at shallower depths, because that seemed to be the issue that, well, if you want to drop to a shallower wheel set, suddenly the internal rim width is just dropping away.
Is that probably because the brands go, oh, you want a climbing wheel because you want a light wheel. We'll keep it narrower and save weight.
I feel that's probably the case.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So, but I think that we're over that now. I think whatever the weight gain is of that wheel being that slight bit wider, I think there's still a lot to be said for a shallower wheel just in terms of even feel. Like it is a different feeling riding a shallower wheel. So if you could run a 30 mil tire with a nice 25 mil internal, I think that's a – and I don't think that's a stopping point. I honestly do agree with him in this sense that we're going to keep going wider and wider with mm-hmm. the internal rim width. Mm-hmm. And he interviewed some clown called Dylan Johnson who went on about tires. Then the other one that I wanted to pick up on was the Parlay guy. And
Parlay, there's a brand.
Parlay? So I pronounce that
Parlay,
correct?
Parlay.
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 So
what are they? They still kicking around.
They're still kicking around making frames. But I liked his – well, I don't know whether I liked it just because this is what I would like to see happen or I liked it because he's spot on. But he was saying that he thinks there'll be greater differentiation between the categories, which I suppose goes against what we've been whinging about. Well, not whinging about, but I suppose just talking about, which is the thing that, oh, it's everyone's just going to have the one bike to rule it all and you can kind of ride a bit of gravel on it, but it's also a really high-performance road bike. His kind of point was more that, no, there's going to be greater differentiation between the categories. He saw the categories going different ways. So something like an elite-end aero road bike not looking necessarily like an all-day road bike, didn't call it endurance road bike, and then gravel going an even more extreme route of off-road, slacker, wider tires, essentially sort of, you know, mountain bikey type thing. So that
he said that was the trend, or what he wanted to see. I mean, that's not the trend. That was the trend 5 years ago.
Well, that's what we're seeing now. I agree, but maybe and hopefully the point is that he's looking into the future and seeing that, well, this is where we will go in 5 years, that the differentiation will go there. And the reason I sort of bring this up is I feel like we're in this really weird point, okay, where we're still in a position where us, the bike riding people, are trying to compare bikes from different categories.
I think that one of the things that's happening is these people are at Sea Otter, which is more of an off-road event. So they're probably getting a mix of, they're discussing between categories. My brain is in road. I still really only care about road. So I'm not sure if this carries through to, when you're talking about differentiation between bikes or models, are you saying between the three road bikes, the aero climbing, the do it all?
I think that's.
Oh, sorry, I should say all road. Do it all means the hybrid aero climbing bike. Or are they talking about between road, which they're saying is all three, then gravel and whatever the hell other crap they have over there?
I don't know about that, Jesse, but maybe what I should have sort of started this out. But so I saw a really interesting video from a UK YouTuber, older guy, Italian guy, and he rides a canyon, and he had a chance. He rides a rim break canyon, and he's a big rim breaker, right?
Yeah.
And he got a chance to ride a few disc brake bikes, the Ultimate and the Aero. Now, Frederico is, by his very nature, he's just a feel guy. Like he's not racing up segments. He's giving us this is what I feel when I get on the bike. Okay. Yep. So he's out and he's riding his Ultimate rim brake. And it's like, I love this. I won't do the accent. I'm out there and I'm riding, and it's as soon as I get out of the saddle, snap, snap, I'm away. It's just this lightweight it's a bike, whatever. And he jumps on the Ultimate disc, the current iteration of it. He's like, yeah, okay. I mean, it's got disc brakes, but a bit heavier than my rim brake one. And, you know, I'm riding around Richmond Park, and I mean, I see sort of where this is going, but I don't feel any, there's no push factors to get me on this. It actually just feels like a slightly sloppier version of my rim brake bike with better brakes, okay?
Yep.
Now, we won't go into what wheels and tires he had on and that kind of stuff, but you could kind of see in his head going, I don't get around this.
Yep.
He gets on the aeroad and he's like, oh, no. This is different. Now, whether he liked it or he didn't like it, he still used terms like, oh, it's heavy to get up to speed. I mean, it's 500 grams lighter, heavier, but whatever. But again, purely based on feel.
It's the vibe. It's the feel.
It's the feel. He's purely basing it on feel. And he was, after a couple of minutes riding anything, he's like, no, this is different. This has made me think, do I need this bike? Now, he goes and he does some like hill climbing in Mallorca and these sort of places. He would never consider taking a sloppy, heavy aero to such a location such as that. But for everything else, he can see this being a different category. And so I suppose, and this is a long way of me kind of coming back to this thing of differentiating between what are the, okay, for this particular example, the aero and the Ultimate, that differentiation being greater and greater and the bike brands leaning more into the high-end performance, what Mathieu van der Poel's on, does the Ultimate and that sort of stuff exist going forward, given potentially the other spaces move into that. And for a guy like this who's just basing everything that he, and this has to be the majority of people. Absolutely the majority of people.
No. This would be the minority.
Basing it on feel.
People don't ride bikes before they buy them. You can't even test ride. That's the crux of the problem. Because if you only bought, if you were only riding a bike for feel, half the time you wouldn't even buy the new bike. You, most of the time people are buying them because they've been told it's faster. And so that, but that's why this is interesting, because he doesn't seem to care if it is faster. He just wants to enjoy the ride.
That was my point about him being the majority, is he just wants to enjoy his ride.
But I'm only in my group of people that I speak to. Right.
Yep.
But the group of people that I'm thinking of as the modern day road rider doesn't want to ride, doesn't know what's the most enjoyable to ride, can't test ride them, and actually doesn't care. They want to ride the bike that they're told is fastest for, you know, not even in the conditions they're riding in. So they will ignore what the bike feels like and they'll just ride what they think is fastest or what is fastest. I don't know. I'm just saying, I think most people that I chat to will ignore the feel and go with what they think's fastest. But I think that that's the new school way. Whereas I'm even more old school. I'm still on a rim brake TC. I'm still more the, like, I want to enjoy the ride. And I'm like, well, okay, yeah, I know for what I do, there's probably faster things. I've kind of ignored that because I really enjoy how my bike rides. But don't you reckon that's now not as common?
I hadn't actually looked at it that way.
Because you've got a rim brake specialisma, which I promise if you rebuilt that up and we went out and did East Hills over in the eastern suburbs of Sydney, you'd go, oh, that's fun. But you're probably not going to go and add that.
But I honestly don't think it will be that different. So I have had a chance over the last week to ride that R5 a little bit, which is only weighs 7.1-ish kilos. It's down in that sort of area. And it, you're right. Like the sensation getting out of the saddle is just completely different to the S5. Completely different. It's like, whoa, the bike's just, it's like just this little thing beneath me, and I'm just this, like, I'm Contador all of a sudden. But I know that sensation goes away very quickly.
Yes.
And I ultimately don't like the way the bike rides for all the things that I do.
Okay.
Push back on it.
Yep.
But there is 100% that, and there's a moment, even when you get off the bike and you sort of pick it up to hang it up on the wall, you're like, look at that. Oh, my God. Yeah. If that's what people get around, I have no issues with that. I mean, I go in phases with this stuff, but I hadn't looked at it from that perspective of you don't get a test. Not everyone gets to be Frederico and ride all the different top-end bikes and then choose the one that makes you feel it. And so you are then basing your decision so much on this chat you see around the place, which is, this one really did frustrate me during the week. So the Cycling Weekly, I think, did Giant TCR.
Bike Radar,
Giant TCR versus Canyon Ultimate. And this was like right in my wheelhouse this week. I'm really thinking about these lightweight bikes. Wow, awesome shootout.
Lightweight battles do battle. And they do have them in, because I'm watching it now. They've got their hands on them.
They got the bikes in. And all we got was this friggin' spec read. And this is just a little gripe that I have generally with a lot of these things. They talk really specifically about the spec that they received from the distributor or the brand for the review. And so you might get, you know, you'll get the whole the bit about the frame geometry and all that kind of stuff. And then you'll get 3 minutes about the tires. And saying that the tires aren't the right tires for this particular, who cares? Like that's the easiest thing to fix. Like if you're we're really disappointed that it came with a low grade tire. It would have been, well, just change it in your shop, your bike radar. Put a decent set of tires. Put both the bikes on the same set of tires, so we get some sort of shooter. Anyways, Super disappointed about that because you got no actual comparison other than a spec read of the two. And then and the most annoying part was you're going to get to the bit where they were going to say, which one would they actually prefer? Well, they just did the full cop-out pandering answer of, oh, well, actually, just get the last year's iteration because it's much cheaper. Like, well, anyone could tell you that, like that the previous iteration's version was going to be cheaper. We want to know which one's actually better out of these new top-end lightweight climbing bikes.
So I didn't watch the video. Someone's commented, which one was more comfortable? Which handled better? I'm surprised they didn't answer that in the video.
Just like, I mean, I clicked on that. I assume that's going to get a lot of views because that's a really, they're two bikes that a lot of people would be considering. I guarantee you that is a bike that those two models are bikes right up against each other. And I'm just, I don't know, super annoyed by that.
What would you pick?
Oh, I'd pick the TCR. 100%. 100%.
This decathlon chat. How they're doing so well. And it's, oh. And it's all because of the Van Ryzel.
Hot property they are, Jesse. They're hot property.
It's the bikes have transformed the team.
We may have said that. I'm pretty sure we did.
I hope I didn't say that.
I'm pretty sure.
I'm pretty sure I didn't
I'm
say
I'm pretty
that.
Sure I did. A while ago, like months ago.
You're going to, oh, you said.
I'm sure I did.
Oh, that's going to transform the team.
Yeah, 100%. Right. When they did that UAE team attack, I was like, oh, the bikes have transformed the team. They got vibe. They're all about it.
I've got no issues with that. I'm sure the vibe's good in the team. The riders are really doing well. They're performing on another level. The this kind of black and white thing where it's, oh, the Van Ryzel bikes must be really good and the riders are really happy for them and that's why they're winning, already have like matched their wins from the past 10 seasons in the first 3 or 4 months of the year. Like, there's so much more that goes into winning a bike race than, I mean, unless they were on Conti Gator skins, 19 mil, like they were on a pretty good bike before. They were on the bloody BMC Team Machine, Campy. Pretty sure they were on Conti tires. Oh, no, were they on Vittoria's?
They were on Campy wheels. They would have been pretty, they would have been a lot of tubulars being run. What's your point? So you over the chat, you think the bike's being overrated as part of this whole thing?
I think the bike's being fucking massively overrated. That, like, look, I
think you're an elitist, Jesse.
I'd have to look at the spec.
No, you're an elitist.
Oh, well, let me look at the spec. Okay, look, actually, no, I may be, I'm, look, now that I'm actually going and looking
now that
before
I've actually
I talk,
done some research.
Yeah. No, now I'm looking, okay, the borers, if they were on, they weren't on tubs because those borer WTOs were, they've been tubeless for ages.
They have been
tubeless,
but they were pretty thin internal rim width, so wouldn't have been running very well.
And they were on Pirelli tyres, which are going to be slower than Conti's. You know what? We can probably just
I'm happy to see watch this sort of playing out in your brain because, you know, I think you are a bit elitist here. Like last year, we're sitting around talking about how amazing the Cervelo SRAM partnership has been for Visma, and it's the game changer, and we're all very very excited about it, and it's very frothy. And this poor old little French team battling away suddenly get a bike that's decent and they're winning a few races. It's I think it's a good news story personally. And
I'm not saying it's a I
think it matters to the extent that it's just from the pure.
So you think they're doing well because the bike?
I think it's one of the factors, and I do think it's a factor where the guys have actually. They're not
no vibe. Remove. I'm talking about the bike.
Oh, okay.
Because that's at least on Twitter that I've seen of the Decathlon AG2R, whatever the fuck the team's called, are doing well because the new bikes are really fast.
No.
And I'm going, well, look, I'm going through now. I go through it. I can go, okay. They'll be on wider. They're on wider rims. They got. They're on Conti tires. The frame. They had access to an aero frame before. Okay, you know, you're scraping some speed there. Is that going to result in over the season what's probably going to end up being quadruple the number of wins? I doubt it.
No, I think that's certainly overblown. But I certainly think they've gone from running a setup that was a disadvantage to running a setup that is certainly has leveled the playing field for
you. Know why I think it bugs me is because if a team does badly,
Kofidis,
they don't. People generally don't blame the equipment. It's sort of just
I do, but anyway,
you do. On. Yeah, but generally in the media, no one's going, whatever or shit because they're on 25 mil tubs. No one mentions it. And then a team does well and it's like, oh, look, they changed bike sponsors. The bike must be amazing. And you're like, it's so just.
That's a good gripe. No,
can
I,
we
I rate
think
that.
Through some stuff
I rate
first?
That gripe. 100%. Yeah. The only people whinging about what Kofidis' setup are slopping about on their tubulars at the moment was probably me walking up and down the pits going,
yeah,
are you
to
joking
and under
me?
Going, what is this?
This is a legit
garbage.
Performance disadvantage.
But isn't that a whole media thing where it's like, well, you know, is a news outlet going to rag on a brand? Probably not kosher. But, if the team does well, oh, look how amazing it is.
That's a good point.
It's just like, oh, my God, give me a break.
Yep. No. So, anyway, but that's all right. Come here for your brand bragging. who cares anyway? Seriously, the racing is totally shit. This has been the worst season of racing. Like, it's just been, have you watched, I suppose San Remo was all right, but meh. Like, it's been slim pickings. Is it just the fact we don't have GCN Plus or?
Look, I like seeing the mutant performances I like to see every now and again, but.
You can't use that word.
What do you mean?
You can't use mutant performances.
Why not?
All right.
Well, no, I'm not.
Do you ever see that? Have you seen
well,
that?
Well, you ride a. Paris Bay at 49k an hour. That's a.
What's that?
Maybe I can I not use that because it's inferior doping or something. Yeah. That's not. I'm just saying. There's the mutant. We call them extraterrestrials or the. There's this class. The other class of riders that are 5% better than everyone else.
Yep.
And we can name them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's. Look, every now and again, you love to see that, you know, Poggy riding away, and it's like it's amazing what to watch. But when it's happening every race,
and when they're not getting to race each other as well,
yes,
that's the other thing.
This whole split program thing, yeah. I have barely watched any of the races in full.
Mm.
So the interesting thing is when you don't have to sit down and watch the whole race, and all I'm watching is whatever Eurosport or the channels put up on YouTube, whatever highlights put up. I'm actually watching pretty much even men's and women's races because when you're only watching a 7-minute highlight video, I'll watch both. Like I'm watching the Vuelta Feminina, I think that's what it's called, at the moment, the highlights videos. So actually the fact that you can't watch a full race and it doesn't suck 2 hours of your day, I'm kind of even between the men's and women's racing now because it doesn't cost me any time.
So I'm slightly different. I still have persisted with trying to watch, especially of the monuments and the bigger races, the actual a good portion of it because Flow Sports and my little Express VPN has been managing that quite well. But I crossed that threshold for LBL this year where I just didn't even bother with the bloke's race and just watched the women's race entirely and then caught the results of the guy's race at the end of it. So, I mean, I don't know where we are with it. This is clearly, for me, this is kind of the moment. And every single women's race this year has been compelling, absolutely compelling. Whether it's just the fact that you've got more people at a similar level, at that top elite level that have started to push through. You know, from a personal perspective, watching more of it just means you become more engaged in the people and the storylines and all that kind of stuff. Absolutely. But
it's more even than the men's race.
Yes, definitely.
It used to be sort of the opposite or just kind of what am I watching? It's kind of slop. But now it's the men's race kind of looks like B grade because there's so many dominant performances that the women's bunch is actually more interesting.
Kind of got me thinking a bit about it. Like this is clearly a point in it, and this has been a conversation having a little bit in other sports at the moment as well. But
the equipment is also getting more even. I don't know if it's just me, but there was always watching the women's races, and there was like some crappy teams that were on sloppy bikes, and they wouldn't be as decked out and on the gear, and just visually watching it, it wasn't as compelling to watching the men's races. But now, even if we take this, as we spoke about in the start of the episode, that the POC aero helmet, the women are also riding it. So just in terms of the gear and how stimulating it is to watch in terms of, am I putting that right? Just what gear people are running, they're more even. It doesn't look like some back league watching the women's race. They're more even.
There's more. This is just the truth. There are more reasons than just an interesting bike race that you sit and watch 2 hours of bike racing. You're there spotting equipment, frothing equipment. Like, let's be honest. That's what we're doing. Like, I'm not sitting there every moment going, will she attack? Won't she attack? Who knows? Oh, my God, this is so compelling. I'm there going, oh, they're shallow depth rims. Interesting. You know, that's kind of what's happening.
And but it used to be. You sit there.
Yes.
Women's race. Oh.
SD Works. All right
old
the front.
Stuff. Geez, that bike fits terrible. Oh, that's, what are they running that those wheels for?
Yeah.
And you just go, and you just sit there and you just go, oh, like, it doesn't look professional, but now it looks just as pro as the men's.
And I'm not doing some deep dive into women's psych. I'm watching it just because it's better to watch. That's why I watch sport. But what there seems to be things that are working here, which, you know, you're kind of at this point at the moment with the women's pro peloton that I almost feel like doubling down on what's working for them is the thing to do. By that, I mean, okay, so we're not doing long transition stages. We're keeping races to like 2-3 hours. Fantastic. Short, punchy races. Not trying to recreate the professional men's peloton in this. And the other kind of thing I was thinking is, and this is, I reckon this is an easy potential downfall. Like, it's always my biggest gripe with the men's racing scene is that the Tour de France just dominates everything. So that the Tour just ASO has this death grip on the professional cycling scene. It does, right? Wouldn't it be awesome if, because the women don't have the prestige and heritage of the Tour de France,
mm-hmm.
couldn't we just double down now before the ASO get their mitts into it? Couldn't we double down on this being an actual calendar of racing of equal importance? I know.
The Tour de France is exactly what they're missing.
No.
Like.
But it doesn't need to, because it just owns the men's race.
I know they have
race.
The Tour de France, but it's not.
But it owns the men's race, and we can't, our sport is stuck. We can never progress.
Yeah, but it's so good.
But we've sat here in the past and just whinged about the fact that all these other events that happen all year that we think are important aren't actually important, because the only thing that moves the needle is a tour. I mean, I just think this would be amazing that the women's peloton could be the thing that has a grand tour in Africa and South America, and it's just as important, and suddenly you have
a global
sport.
But it never will be as important. It'll never. No, you're better off having one skyscraper than 100 little three-bedroom houses.
All right, well, we'll agree to disagree on that one. But, yeah. All right, Jesse, that's us done this week.
All done. Actually, now we're right at the end, so special club, if you're still listening, you had the Navy Nero suit on, new one coming. It's not ready yet. I'm still waiting. That was a sample you were in. We've also got some other bits coming. It should be within the next 2 or 3 weeks it'll go live. And I'm not going to set it live until we do the show. So I will set the, when it comes back in stock, because I don't hold stock, so it'll just be the amount that I've ordered. So it's fair. I will set it live when the show goes up, which should be in the show in 2 or 3 weeks' time. It'll be in stock, that the new Nero design of the skin suit. The Navy design of the suit. Plus, there's a couple of other bits that will be there too that you can purchase. So that is coming.
Can I just say it's absolutely sick. It is so cool. I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
it feels very pro when you put it on. You go, ooh.
It's got nice. It's got some sneaky little additions on the shoulders and the sleeves as well. So no, you've done a great job with that. And can I just quickly re-mention, please, if you're in the Glen Innes area and you found an Insta360 Go white Bob camera thing, please do us a favor and get in contact. That would be much appreciated. All right, we will see you real soon.
See you next week.
See you now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.